On air across Tamworth.
106.8 FM.
And online.
TCRFM.co.uk.
This is your Total Choice Radio.
Wild Time. The Animal Rights / World Conservation Show on 106.8 TCRFM.
TCRFM.
Some listeners may find the contents of this show disturbing. Parental discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome to Wild Time, the Animal Rights / World Conservation Show with myself, Thomas Janak, here on TCRFM, 106.8 FM in and around Tamworth, and of course globally on tcrfm.co.uk, and of course online on wildtimeonline.blogspot.com. That's wildtimeonline.blogspot.com. And of course you can find us on Facebook, which is www.facebook.com/wildtimeradio. Now, I'm talking to a lady here today called Babette de Jonge. She's in Holland, but most people call her Babette because it's probably easier. And the things that I remember about Holland is a thing called gehaktebal and vanilla and chocolate fla, which is some sort of custard. And I know that there's no vegan version of it, but that's what I remember. You know, every time I went to Holland, I had these chocolate fla and vanilla fla. It's just divine. Anyway, Babette, very welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you very much.
I wanted to talk to you for a long time because you're involved in Wildcats World.
Yeah, that's right.
And as such, you work closely with organizations that have to do or that work with, endangered cats almost, and oftentimes endangered species in Europe and South Africa. And we have covered quite a lot about wild cats, and we know that the Amur leopard and the Amur tiger, or the Siberian tiger, both are on the endangered species list. And we also just recently read that a whole family of five has been killed in Russia. So it's not getting any easier for big cats. So if you could just tell us, what are the main worries and what animals at this point in time are the most endangered, and what can we do about this?
We have 36 species of wild cats, actually. So it's ranging from the biggest cat, the Siberian tiger, and the smallest cat is called the black-footed cat in South Africa. But all the cats, they're all endangered, actually. Mm-hmm. Some of them are least threatened, and the others like the Siberian tiger or the...
I read that the Amur leopard as such, there's probably just 40 of them in Russia.
Yeah, a leopard is one of the most endangered ones as well.
Yeah.
I think there are about 30 species left, 30 of the species left in Russia. So it's really not much, you know.
Yeah.
But also, like the... And you call the Sumatran tiger from Indonesia. I mean, it's also very few left. And the Iberian lynx from Spain is also very few. So it's really, all the cats are threatened or endangered, and it's really getting worse and worse. So it's really the clock ticking for them, you know.
Yeah. So obviously the problem is that obviously the animals that you mentioned, they live all over the place and all over the world. Therefore, it's not as easy as saying if they would live in one place, then we could probably just all... put our effort into conserving that one habitat. But it looks like, doesn't matter where they are, it's not going well for them. So so I know that you're involved in this quite heavily, and you're even involved with helping lions that are or were planned for cant hunting, which is another pet hate of ours. So tell us a bit about what Wild Cat World is doing.
Well, Wild Cat World is, our mission is to concentrate on all wild cats, so both in captivity and in the wild. So at one point we are creating a good life for captive cats, you know, like the tigers and lions, leopards, and all the cats that are born in captivity. Sometimes they're really abused, or they're in concrete cages. They're very small and very mistreated. So we really like to give them a good life, and we fight for causes to create this for them. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, we also support projects that are fighting for the survival of, like, say, cheetah or tiger in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both things we are doing, actually. So it's a huge project.
Yeah. It's probably a good idea, because when you support someone's project, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, well, there's usually projects we know that they're doing a great job, you know. So, like, you have a cheetah conservation team in Namibia, and they are working all over Europe as well. So we can meet them, you know, what they're doing. They show you their workshops. So if you really must know what they're doing, we must be involved in it. Then we know that's a good project, you know.
Okay.
And there are very few that are really doing what they are saying, because most big projects. They just more in the business for self gain.
Yeah. So that's why it's great to have you on, because what I would like obviously to ask you is what can we do? It would be good if you could then direct us towards the groups that you think would be good to support.
Well, support Wild as well. That's a start.
Yeah. Okay. So how can people do that then?
Well, we have different ways of supporting. I mean, we have different projects. Like I say, we have projects in captivity. I mean, you could, for instance, symbolically adopt one of our ambassador leopards or ambassador cheetahs. They have a very good life in captivity, but they're at the same time, we show them to the people to create more awareness, to more knowledge, and that the people start loving these animals. And then
just to clear that one up, we're not talking about zoos here.
No, not a zoo.
I understand. I mean, that was once the argument that the zoos are using. We're showing you these animals to raise awareness. And look how many of these animals are in captivity. In our sort of book, oftentimes a zoo is just a prison for animals. Now, what you're doing and what other groups are doing is, and I read that on a post just the other day, that, for instance, with regards to the one of the lions in Egypt, you couldn't just bring them to Africa. They're not even welcome and probably not safe. So obviously, so these animals in captivity, they're there because nobody else, basically, they cannot be rehomed, right?
Yeah, because the problem is, like this Egyptian tiger of a lioness, when she was born, she was taken away from her mother, and then she was put in a very small cage and just abused by a photographer to take pictures with big flashes.
So she doesn't even know how to hunt.
No, she doesn't know how to hunt. She doesn't know how to live, actually, because she was only in a small concrete cage where she could barely stand or walk. Mm. So now we are almost having her out of there, and we want to bring her to our sanctuary in Holland. We have a sanctuary in Holland as well, mm-hmm. with huge enclosures, natural-like, with grass and lots of enrichments. But there's some people who say, she shouldn't go to Holland, she should go to Africa. But then I was saying, Africa, I mean, you have 6,000 lions already there who are waiting to be killed in kent hunting. And then we bring this lioness over there. The country doesn't want more lions.
And I think it has something to do with this people sometimes not knowing about this, because you would regularly, I think regular people say, the lion comes from Africa, so return him home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not everybody understands that there's a real problem for animals.
Yeah, and the problem is that this lioness is aged, born in captivity, so she is not knowing how to hunt, but she's never used to be part of a pride. Even knows how it feels to grass under her paws. I mean, how would she feel if you just put her over the cage and let her walk out? I mean, she would be killed in 5 minutes. And not only she, but maybe she will kill other people and pets and whatever is walking there as well, because she doesn't know how to hunt.
Yeah. I mean, what becomes apparent when I checked your site or your Facebook page, as it were, is that your work is sort of never ending. So there is a real crisis when it comes to these big cats being in trouble. I reckon that there are different causes to this. What is the main cause? Why are they losing their habitats? And is there a place where you would say, this is where people focus or have to focus the most? Because, as you know, not everybody is as diverse as you and as knowledgeable. So people would probably say, I just have barely enough time to focus on one thing. So that's why I'm sort of basically asking if people want to divide that or want to be more specific on something. Just to give us a bit of an overview of what's happening where.
If you want to focus on a tiger.
Yeah.
You have tigers in India or in Siberia or in Indonesia. So there are different kind of projects. I mean, it depends on which tiger species you want to focus. If you want to focus on the Siberian tiger, then there's a project in Russia. Mm-hmm. But you also have different projects. I mean, for the Bengal tiger in India, I mean, most tigers that are left are in India, but they're also much on the threat because there's still poaching and human conflicts, and their territory is getting smaller and smaller. And if you increase the number of tigers, like some people want to do, I mean, you must offer them equal amount of land, you know.
Yeah.
That's probably
that's one of the issues, isn't it? I mean, what some people are fearing, what I sort of gathered from different pages there is that eventually they will all be extinct, and then when individuals get saved, they will end up in sanctuaries. So again, people will only be able to look at them in captivity. Probably your long-term plan is to have them stay in the wild.
We are, of course, fighting for. I mean, but that's why it's two different things, because it's proven that it is not yet haven't been a success to relocate captive-born cats into the wild again. I mean, there's lots of fairy tales that there has been some success there, but not yet there's been, like, say, a cheetah or a lion or a tiger that has been born in captivity. Mm. They never survived longer than 1 year in the wild. So it's kind of, mission impossible, you know?
It is a problem if they haven't been raised by their mum in the wild.
But it's not only the biggest problem, because, I mean, hunting is one thing, but the natural instincts, they will always be there with the cats, you know? Mm. So they can learn to hunt, but that's not the biggest problem. I mean, if you, for instance, say you have a pride of lions, you will relocate them to Africa in one region. But there are so many problems there, not only the hunting, but there the lions that are already there, you know. How will you react? Will they be killed by the lions? There are other predators. There are humans around. How would they react if some sort their new lions
so,
there?
So is
know?
There? So we know that relocating sometimes isn't the option, because obviously there are other brides, and then they just go for, because they only have a certain amount of land, and obviously they don't want, you know, to lose all their women.
Even there's specific illnesses or viruses you have in one part of Africa, and captive born or lions born in another part, they're not resistant to that, you know, they're not resistant, so they even die because of that.
Yeah.
You know, the story about Elsa the lioness,
yes, of
course, successful story, but still, she died because she was released back in the wild, and then she was dead within a year because she wasn't resistant to the virus.
It's not easy to even get your head around this. So are there solutions?
First, the focus must be on to conserve what's already in the wild, you know, because every day we lose tigers, we lose leopards, we lose cheetahs because people hunt them, and because because other predators kill them and whatever. So we lose animals every day, and if we can just put a stop to that,
How are we going to do that? Because I remember, you know, talking to quite a number of groups about this. Some people would say, look, you know, the number one is to stop hunting and increase tourism, because hunting brings a lot of money in. So eventually, wildlife watching has to create, sort of, you know, has to basically make them the same amount of money, but it might take longer. So therefore, you know, most places probably wouldn't even go down that road. I also have spoken to someone a while ago. What they do this really weird way of hunting where they basically have people shoot at the animals, but they only dart them, which can't be healthy either, because the animal goes down 5 times a week. You know, it just doesn't
improve,
you know,
their health.
but they were saying, no, at least they're not, they don't die, and you kind of feel like, well, because it's apparently about the thrill of the hunt. So on a whole, it's a big mess. So how, in your work, how do we manage to put a stop to it? Because I also reckon that political will is lacking in places. Is there a concrete idea that you have on how to tackle this?
Well, the biggest problem is actually, like you mentioned, that the government, I mean, like in South Africa, it's still legal to hunt these the endangered species. I mean, you can hunt them for fun. So, and as long as the government thinks, oh, we get filthy rich because of this, they won't stop it. So the only thing I think, well, for us, I mean, we're not God or something, so I'm not thinking that we can change this in one night. But
that I understand. But obviously, you know, when you work with this,
but what we are doing, I think that's a good way, is to raise awareness for it, to keep show it to people with all kinds of information, with photos, with names, with everything, and to warn them for certain places and certain things that are happening, because a lot of people, and that's what I found out when I'm sharing this on my pages and my website, that a lot of people are shocked because they just don't know, you know, they don't know really what's going on.
But then when people see it and they say, well, you know what, this is, you know, this is a surprise to me, do petitions work?
Well, I think in the end, I hope it will work, but I think if you have, you name and shame a place like in South Africa, we just did with places where you can hunt, you pay big money.
Yeah, they can hunt
you. Lion, leopards, rhino even. And I mean, if you show the people, I mean, it's a bit tricky because if you go to a game and predator farm in South Africa, it sounds like, oh, we're going to a zoo, we're going to watch animals, you know. But then it's a bit tricky because they have little cubs there, lion cubs, tiger cubs. You can cuddle them. You can interact with them. People pay money for that. They're saying, oh, it's nice. I can be posing with a picture with a lion cub, and the people like that. But then these lion cubs, they grow, and when they're, especially the male lions, when they're fully grown and big manes, then they are being sold again for big money. And then they go to kent hunting business, and people can shoot them. Yeah. And after that, that's the newest trend, that after they're killed, the breeders or the kent hunting farm, they collect the bones and they will sell it to China. And then, again, they make big money. So it's a lion that's dead is much more worth than a lion that's alive, to say it a bit rudely. Now, how can I going to stop that? I mean, we have to open the eyes of the tourists who will go there, who will pay their money, first of all, to interact with the cubs. And if these people, less and less people go and visit these places because they know it's not like, it's a nice place to cuddle cubs, what a nice place, you know, they're so good to the cubs. No, they're all ending up to be killed, you know.
So basically you're saying if people do go to these places, which obviously is much better than very different to looking at animals in a zoo, obviously.
That's why people like it so much.
Yeah. So there has to be that sort of tourism where people can see them in the wild, but obviously keep them wild. Because, I mean, the whole idea of saying, like, you know, I want to cuddle a lion cub and I go to Africa for that, I don't think it's rocket science for that person to understand that this is an unnatural thing to expect this to happen.
But the thing is that it's offered almost everywhere in Africa, and I mean it's kind of innocent because I mean I started once as well. I thought, oh, nice to cut a lion cub, and you think only of your moment with the lion cub, and you have true attention to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes animals. You know, I mean, the funny thing about this is that oftentimes people who experience this become activists. Then, but the majority probably won't become activists, because that would just mean, you know, you have this experience, now you fight against it.
I think
what is probably important is also for people to know how to contact you and how to have a look at your website. So if you could give out your website and your Facebook page, that would be good.
The website is www.wildcatsworld.nl.
So that's www.wildcatsworld.nl.
One word.
Is it only in Dutch or can people?
No,
like
it's not. It's based in Holland. The organization is based in Holland because we also have a sanctuary in Holland, but we are also working in other countries. But so all our
the website would be bilingual. It's English, okay.
Yeah, all information is in English, yeah.
Because I remember we did an interview about foxes, urban foxes, and ended up on a page called Wulpes Wulpes in the Netherlands. And obviously, our interview was English, but the website was Dutch, so they linked to us, in a way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which is not a bad thing, you know.
It's all English. Also, our Facebook page is also Wild Cats World. Look it up on Wildcats World.
So that's www.facebook.com/wildcatsworld. For people who are listening to this and you say, like, well, you know, never quite understood that, if you go to wildtimeonline.blogspot.com, that's wildtimeonline.blogspot.com, that's where you find all the interviews we re-record and then later air, we will provide those links on the blog. All you have to write in is wild cats or, you know, something like this, and you will find the interview. So for the people who are online, we will provide that. But if you just listen to this on the radio, you know, I hope you listened.
Yeah, I hope so too. And then maybe it's interesting to mention that from this kent hunting business that's going on in Africa, we have now managed to rescue two cubs, two lion cubs.
And where are they now? I mean, how does this work?
Well, at this moment, well, they were, like I said, always when the breeders are the breeding lions for the Kent hunting business, mm-hmm. they have the cubs often raised at a different place,
okay.
At some other project or farm who also make money right. to have volunteers there or to have tourists coming there to interact with the cats, and they raise the cubs for money. So we, at this place, we met these two cubs, and we thought, well, we started asking questions, you know, where the parents were and why, what will happen to these cubs, and I started investigating the farm where they were coming from, and then I found out that the farm that they're coming from are one of the biggest traders and Kent hunting breeders in Africa.
Mm-hmm. So did you have to buy them off?
So we, yeah, that's the unfortunate part of it.
Because I remember we talked to someone in Australia probably a year ago, and she sort of buys, young calves off these markets. And the problem is, it's really nice that she does that, but obviously, you know, they get their money, so they will continue doing
that. Yeah.
So
that's a bit of the problem we had, and also we are facing, because a lot of people are also, yeah, telling their opinion. But the problem is that we met these cubs, and now we know this, so we were a bit in doubt, what should we do, because we knew these cubs would, in a few months' time, they will go back.
And I personally have to say, I don't blame you, because I once bought a parrot on whom I worked as a psychologist, you know, and I had to buy him off the shop, even after he had been attacked by people. So we took him home, and he lived with us until he recently passed away. So wasn't the best move, but they wouldn't have given him to us. So we had to buy him.
No, that's the problem. You know, they don't want to give it, and we know for sure that these two will end up dead. So
yeah. But sort of logically speaking, obviously there's no learning curve then. There was just me saying, look, you know, I really, you know, we better have him. We're both not saying that that's the solution for it. You know, it's just one of those things that you sometimes do when you see them face to face, I suppose.
Yeah, that's not the solution, but I think that's Wildcat's World about, that every life of only one animal we can save, we will save, you know.
But I can understand that people sort of say to you, like, you know, so what happened to the other 60, you know, obviously.
Yeah, well, we want to save them as well. If the people start donating, as per now, now we set them all in, we buy them all. But that's the problem, you know, because we know these two cups, so this won't go back. I mean,
I think the other problem that we're all facing, you know, when you listen to this, you know, on the radio or online, hunting makes so much money that it is very difficult to say, let's just buy one of those animals. You know, because it is amazing the amount of money that can be made by allowing hunters, you know, kill your animals there. So that's very difficult, you know, to put this into perspective and just say, well, you know, let's just buy these animals off. Because I remember in 2007 I went to Africa for a ranger course, because I thought it could be a job for me, and then it turned out it wasn't. But anyway, I did that. And they told us that one hunter can bring in as much money as 1,000 volunteers in a year. And just imagine, you know, what sort of money they're exchanging. So they're very welcome there. We have already created this world where we have sort of animals, and even though we perceive them to be in the wild, they have to control them. Even in Kruger Park and stuff, you hear these stories because, you know, they have a certain amount of space. And back in the day, they would all try to convince us that they would only shoot the animals that can no longer breed. And now.
Yeah. Yeah,
and even that obviously wouldn't be right. But maybe they would say, like, you know, now, you know, we gave them a great life. Now, if they shoot them, we can give a great life to others. And they just became casualties. So on a whole, the whole system is flawed.
Hunters, I mean, in general, not only of the cats, but also of game, they keep trying to make us believe that their way of shooting animals is conservation, you know?
Yeah.
That they are really the best way of conservation, but that's bullshit. I mean,
yeah, it is. And just for you listeners out there, we have done so many interviews on this. If you type in hunting on Wildtime Online, there will be interviews coming up about this with people who are working in those fields. So if you want to, you know, find out more about this, we know from our conversations that we had and from, you know, things we can Google, so don't take my word for it, that this is really not true.
No, that's not true. And I mean, if you think you can, I mean, hunting in a true sense of the world. I mean, like the Eskimos did. I mean, with a knife in their boats, it starts.
Exactly.
To,
and they would only take what they need. I mean, that's completely different.
Sweet. Yeah, but I mean, trophy hunting or Kent hunting. I mean, what's the sport of that? I mean, to tell how Kent hunting works. I mean, it's a fenced area, and it doesn't matter how big. It usually is small. But they have tamed lions. They are used to people, so they don't run away. Okay. Start with.
Yeah. And they can't run anywhere, so they call it sport, and I always think in sport, yeah, the other party knows that they're in it.
They usually are tranquilized, or they are lured with meat, or with a water hole.
To make it easy,
And the people come there, and then they shoot. And not in the head just once. No, they shoot a few times, so the suffering is immense for these animals. I mean... Mm. And then after that, they pose smiling on a picture.
which I find the grossest thing to do, because what usually gets me is when you have all these images of people, you know, posing with animals they have just killed.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, there's something not right with that picture.
No, that's not right. and I don't understand why you. I mean, yeah, just today we had we had a picture of Eric Trump. You know, the son of Donald Trump.
I heard about him.
And he was with a leopard on his back, a dead leopard, posing, and he was so happy he shot the leopard.
I mean, those pictures are circulating or have been circulating for a while as well. You know. But you know, it's not surprising in a way. I remember, you know, on one of the Oprah shows there, I have a DVD box set here, you know, with Dutch subtitles, by the way. and she talks to Liberace, the musician, and he tells the story how he wanted to buy a fur coat in the Donald Trump Tower, and Donald Trump said, "Oh, don't buy it because I can get you a better price." So there was absolutely no consideration. For the animals. And obviously, you know, if it's not in your head, you're not going to teach it to your kids.
No, but,
you know?
But the sad thing is, I mean, if you know how much these people spend on shooting an animal, and how hard we try to get some nice donations in, it's not comparable, you know?
No,
millions of dollars just to shoot animals, and we just get, well, we were happy if we get 1,000 euro for to save the animal, you know? So
and
really
that's
so
why it's so difficult even if you would say, okay, you know, we buy these animals off you, you know, and they would say, well, you know, it doesn't matter where the money comes from. We don't have that kind of money.
No, it's always, I mean, we do lots of projects and we invest a lot of money ourselves. But, I mean, sometimes we don't have any savings left, so we need...
People can donate. I take it when they go to your wildcatsworld.nl page. Is that a PayPal button or how does it work?
Yeah, we have PayPal. It's if you go straight to info@wildcatsmagazine.nl.
Okay.
And you can. And we have also an Indigo fundraisers page, but it's all also on Facebook. It's everywhere. And you can also write us, and then we can give you any details.
Yeah. I mean, the point that we are making is that you know, by talking to Babette here, is that you have someone who works in this, you know, sort of full-time in a way, and you know, and constantly. So it makes it safer, I always find, to make sure that the money actually does something good, you know?
Yes, and you can be sure the money goes to the animals every cent. I mean, that's for sure.
So with your sanctuary, then, in the Netherlands,
sanctuary in Holland, but that's it's a different project than the one in Africa, because the one in Holland is part of a big piece of land with lots of animals. You know, it's more like a private park from some owners, and then they offered us to build a huge sanctuary with really, really great space, you know, with lots of enclosures and really a big enrichment hall that the animals can really be happy in, you know. So we have really space for lots of, we already have 7 tigers from surplus from circus, and we have 5 lions that are surplus from zoo, and we have 1 ocelot, a very old ocelot who was already sold to trader. And
and again, you know, all these animals have to be cared for and fed and all that kind of stuff. So so it is really never ending in a way.
No, it's never ending. And we, of course, if you don't want to do it in the best way, we just want to give them everything they need. also medical care, enrichment.
Everything, yeah.
We don't want to put them in a concrete cage, lock the door and say bye.
We want
to do everything for them. And we see that they're happy. I mean, some people are against captivity, but they're really...
We always, you know, I mean, here on Wild Time, I mean, the distinction that we make is that we're definitely against animals in captivity when it comes to them entertaining people,
circus,
or in a circus. But if it is something where, like yourself, you know, if it's a sanctuary, that's completely different, especially given the fact here is that many of these animals none of the animals that you have could be just relocated and rehomed. So that's a completely different thing. And I think people also have to understand this, that when these animals are being there and people can go there, that then they become real ambassadors.
Yeah.
You know?
So like the lioness from Egypt, if she arrives, would be so absolutely different world for her, and also we can show the people how she's from a poor little lion, and she can grow, you know, she can be part of another.
Education is the key. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm sure you emphasize very much that you're not a zoo.
No, we're not a zoo. No. Yeah. And if it's a good zoo, I'm not against it. I mean, there's some good zoos around, and some do good educational work. But there are lots of...
Well, you know, I used to go to zoos, and I loved zoos for a long, long time.
Everybody starts at a zoo.
So in my opinion, you know, since you really, and you probably, I mean, you know this even from your sanctuary, that, you know, it doesn't matter how much space you have, you cannot mimic the wild. So it's always better than the worst case scenario, but it's far from a natural life. So from that point of view, I really don't think that there's a good zoo. There might be zoos that are better than others, but on a whole, I think the whole concept again is really flawed. In that, you know, it seems to have an attraction for us to look at exotic creatures. Yeah. That have
and
no
the problem
say,
is that the zoos, they have a different way of thinking. I mean, like we really are there for the animals, but zoos are there for the money.
Exactly. And you know, the funny thing is that when you talk to people who work in the zoos, I have no doubt in my mind that they do love animals because they have really bad pay and bad hours. So the people who care for these animals...
Yeah, the caretakers, they are perfect. I have a lot of friends who are caretakers in zoos, and they are really doing the best job.
I just want to also to say this, because oftentimes when people get frustrated, you know, don't take it out on the people on Christmas morning shoveling poo, you know, because these are not the ones that make the decisions there.
Caretakers are great, but the management, and that's in all places the same, they make the decisions that are not really popular, you know, and the caretakers, they care for the animals, and a lot of animals are put asleep in zoos these days because they want
just
to keep on breeding.
On the Amur leopards that were taken or put down in Denmark.
Yeah, I mean, they're horrible.
Why don't you even offer them to a sanctuary?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, they're just thinking about their own thing, about the money, and not about
which is really gross. Given that these animals are really almost extinct, and you kind of think, you know, because this is where they shot themselves in the foot, because obviously their argument always is that they're doing education and conservation, and you don't conserve animals by killing them, knowing that there's a handful left in the wild.
And it's such a shame, because with our sanctuary in Holland, with the owners over there, we are working out a plan in Siberia, where also the Amur leopard lives, that we want to buy a huge piece of land there. And it's not the wild yet, but semi-wild. And then we could transport them there. And, I mean, that's a good life, much better than...
And obviously the reality is that there is no perfect solution, because we have already interfered too much. We have taken habitat away. Too many, too much, too quick. So it really is all messed up, and all the problems that the animals have on this planet are man-made.
That's right.
You know?
And I think, if I'm really honest, I don't think we can reverse this, because all the space that's gone, it won't come back. It will only decrease more and more and more. Mm. And these animals, I can see the tigers in India. I mean, they have tiger reserves there, like Pana, like Bandhavgarh, and they're much too small for the tigers. I mean, and if you have a healthy population there, I mean, in Bandhavgarh, you have lots of tigers there, but too many for to live there on the small, in a small reserve, you know. So they're having a lot of inbreeding because their brother, sister, father,
yeah,
you know, all the whole family.
And that's the one thing that always works.
Yeah, because then there's no space, and if they want to get out of the park, then they meet the people, and then they're killed anyway. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So it isn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
So how did you get into this? I mean, when did you say, you know, this is what I'm going to do with my life?
Well, yeah, that started already when I was a little kid. I was already into animals and saving animals, you know. And then, cats have always been favorite. So then I went to the zoo and I went to see lions, tigers, and I thought, well, this,
this you
is
do.
It. And you start to, I think, well, I want to see them in the wild, you know. So I went to travel to Africa, to India. And when you see them there, I mean, you know, yeah, this is it, you know.
Yeah.
And you,
I have to say, I have the same experience when I went to Africa. I've only been there for 2 weeks, but it was sort of in a semi-working environment, which was quite good because you know, you get to see places a bit differently. And I was saying it on an interview that I did with Lucy Byrne from Earth Race. We talked about animals in the wild, and I have about 60 pictures of rhino asses because they were just too quick. You know,
rhinos?
But it, you know, but it doesn't, but it doesn't. You know, we were on these cars, and they were just obviously, you know, the cars were just not, you know, well equipped enough to be, you know, to move as quick as they, you know. So, but it doesn't matter. As long as you see them in the wild, it makes such a big difference to see them in their habitat, you know.
Yeah. If you see elephants, I mean, elephants, you don't want in a zoo. You see them, if you see them roaming around freely with hundreds of elephants, it's just...
And also, you know, knowing that so many animals that we see in captivity usually, you know, have a brain that tells them, you know, let's go off and just wander around, you know. You know, you cannot change their sort of, you know, inbuilt wanderlust. It is a really big problem, you know, because I think what we have to learn is to see, like, you know, what does the animal want? Because, I mean, what you do is damage control.
Yeah, but that's a bit of a problem. I think it's funny you mentioned that if you ask the animals, but I think if we really, I mean, at the point where now the animals are not safe in captivity, or in the wild, and you have them in captivity in a bad way, in a good way, but if you really would ask the animals what they want, I think we might be surprised, because I think lots of things we are doing, we think in our own minds. I mean, we think they want to be in the wild, they want to hunt themselves, they want to be killed there, you know. But if you think really, I mean, what would that choose? That would be very interesting to see, because we are doing a lot of investigation and lots of observations of these animals.
Well, the other problem that you obviously have, even when people use that argument and say, like, you know, like a dog, for instance, who has been domesticated, you know, he lives much longer than the wolf does. Yet, you know, from my work, I'm an animal psychologist, from my work, they still have, I mean, you know, the very fact that you have to cut their nails because they just don't walk enough, they get hip dysplasia and stuff, even when they're not, you know, not just the breeds that have a problem with this. You know, they have much more problems with their joints because they live longer. So even though, you know, I mean, you know, if you would ask me if I would like to be fed every day or if I have to go out to catch it myself, I know that I would say, like, no, you can cook for me all my life. But also, I don't think personally that justifies it, because they are wild animals. And I have been saying this a long time, you know, if natural selection would happen, I wouldn't be against it if I knew that the life that they would have in captivity is not what they were, intended for. Because, I mean, that's the other thing, you know, we look at animals and it's sort of cloaked under the, you know, that's conservation. And really, they're not living a natural life.
No, but as you see, if you, for instance, look at domestic cats, I mean, I think cats is the one thing, the one animal that you can really judge from how do they live in captivity and in the wild, and how, because if you have a domestic cat, usually the cats here in Holland, they go outside on their own.
Yeah.
So they just live their natural life. I mean, they get
lost. Exactly. And then they come home to, yeah.
But they come home. And it's funny because there are some cats, and luckily not my cats, but I know cats from other people, that they decide, well, we want another home, so they go and stay with someone else.
You know? Absolutely, yeah. I mean, they know very well, you know, that, you know, they are kind people and they help them. You know, that's probably, you know, Lev, I mean, we evolve the same way. I mean, that's why we have supermarkets. And it will take forever before we understand that having these supermarkets not only causes obesity to many of us, because, you know, there were times where you wouldn't have meat 5 times a week.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, and also, you know, maybe there will be a time where people think, you know, or, you know, we have all the supermarkets with all the food, and all of a sudden we have no planet left. You know, I mean, look at what cattle farming does to the planet. And eventually it will all collapse, you know?
Yeah.
So, I think.
But to go back to the cats one more time. It's also, yeah, but cats, I mean, the question is, why do they come back? I mean, they could stay outside, they could run away. But also, there are lots of cats who are, with the owners will move, or they will, they're finished with the cat, so they just throw them out, leave them alone.
Mm-hmm.
But within, let's say, 1 week or 2 weeks, they're already.
They're already back, yeah.
Yeah, they can live in a wild. I mean, dogs are not that good, but cats, there, you can rewild them as soon as you can, because the instincts are already there, and they already, a bit of their wild life, they still have in there. And I think the cats, and I think also with the bigger cats, if you have a chance to hunt or whatever, it's still there. I mean, they can do it. You don't have to show them how to do it.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, when they have to choose. I mean, I also know, if I look at our leopards in our big enclosure, and they have an inside camp that's quite small, but it's only for the night if it's really cold. And they have huge space outside, so they can have lots of enrichment there. But sometimes it's just during daytime they want to sleep inside, you know.
I met a cheetah in South Africa who was tame. And what they did... they found her somewhere, and so she was tame, and she was only about, I don't know, 18 months old back then. And they teamed her up with a wild one, so that she would learn the ways of the wild. And every now and then they would go out and substitute her food, because it just wouldn't quite manage to do it on her own. So it's quite interesting. This particular specimen would not have lived, would not have survived on her own in the wild.
Difficult.
I'm just saying it, you know. So it's difficult when we sort of generalize, you know.
Yeah, but the problem with cheetahs is, of course, it's not only the hunting, but they have so many natural enemies. I mean, it's not only the humans, but it's the lions, the hyenas, and the other cheetahs, leopards, baboons, everything. Yeah. There's so many, and that's the problem with releasing cheetahs back in the wild.
Mm.
But also the remaining cheetahs that are still there in the wild, lots of them are being killed, you know.
Yeah.
But it's quite shocking how many. I think within a year, it's about 72 cheetah cubs. They were stolen from the wild.
Yes, yes. And just to plug this one, we have spoken to Sybil Foxcroft about the cheetahs in Kenya.
Oh, yeah.
So if you type in Kenya or Sybil or cheetah on wild,
I know.
So just for your listeners out there, if you type in one of those terms on wildtimeonline.blogspot.com, that's wildtimeonline.blogspot.com, the interview will come up, because it's, you know, sometimes we talk about things and then we mention animals that we have already talked about. So to give you a bit of a picture, I mean, that's why we upload the interviews, so you can share them and you can listen to them at your leisure. Always good to plug myself.
Yeah, but it's another threat, and especially to cheetahs, I mean, that they steal the cubs, and they...
What is obviously so difficult is that people do it because they can. So there's no consideration for the animal. People don't even understand sometimes that it's just not right to do that. So I think that's why education and awareness raising remains the most important thing. And I also think, like, you know, when you see them in the wild and you understand that this is their natural place, then eventually the next generation of people to come... probably see that it's worth making sure that the habitat stays safe, you know.
Yeah, and the problem, with the hunting, it's the sad thing is that if there's money involved, big money,
it is overnight.
Big money. Because I mean, like say the two cubs we were rescuing, if you talk about them, and then we had to pay, like, say, 3,000 euros for each of them. But if they would go and be sold to the cat hunting business, they get 40,000 for each. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So really, from that point of view, you know, they were quite nice to let you have them. You know, when you look at it from that point of view, you know, but it's so messed up, isn't it? I mean, it's so messed up.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, and what we're trying to do from that point on is to say awareness, but with the two cubs, I mean, it's not only that we just buy them and we think, oh, we have to rescue two. No, we want to do a campaign with these two ambassadors for cat hunting, and we say we can show them to the people, and we can say, yeah, we can tell them the story, and also what would have been their future if they wouldn't be with us, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
and then we can name and shame all these breeding farms and cat hunting farms, because breeding predators, it always goes like breeding, racing, and interacting with the cats. It always goes hand in hand with cat hunting and trophy hunting.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there's always a very dark side to all of this.
Yeah, there's no need whatsoever to breed with these animals anymore in captivity, because they're, I mean, if you have the Siberian tiger, there are more Siberian tigers in one state of America
than
there's in the whole wild, you know.
We already know there is no sense in it. It does not make sense. You know, sometimes you kind of, you know, look for sense, but there is none.
No, there's no sense. That's the sad part of it. And we try to make sense, and that's sometimes very frustrating.
Yeah,
because,
absolutely.
Yeah, where do we start?
I think what we're left with is to keep at it. And I just also wanted to sort of say this to the people who listen to this, because it sounds rather gloomy, but that's part of this show, I have to say. You know, we can be rather gloomy sometimes, because you have to sort of fit it all into a format. Continuing donating, let's just say, to people like Babette here, at least it saves some life and something can be done. And there is a presence there that says, look, no, we're watching you, and our numbers get bigger. So don't just say, oh, there's nothing I can do and it's all bad, so let's stop giving, because that would just not achieve anything, and the people who hunt these animals will win. You know, I just want to say that, because, you know, I can understand, you know, I sort of listening to what we just recorded here, a lot of people think, like, wow, this is such a massive problem. And it is. And it can be overwhelming, you know?
But I think you have to start somewhere, and you have to, each individual you can save, you can give a better life, get something. I mean, if we don't care for those things anymore, we can better stop.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think we can still, I mean, every day we can do something good for either a captive one or a wild one, and it will all be come together, because if one day the blackest scenario that all the wild cats from the wild are vanished, we still have a buffer in captivity, and then if it's safe out there, we can start to do something with the genetical material. I mean, that is not completely extinct, you know. Yeah. So it's always worth fighting for, both captivity and in the wild, because in the end it's all important and it's all contributing to the conservation of these animals. And if you already give up now, they will never manage. So we have to keep fighting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, giving up is not an option, really.
No, not at all. No.
I have to let you go now. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Yes, thank you very much for the interview. And
and I'm sure it's almost as you will talk again.
Yes, I'm sure.
Okay, then.
Okay, thank you very much.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
This is 106.8 TCR FM.